Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca, as well as channel 806 on Sastel Max and 341 on Access. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwanga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week joined again by Mona Hill, our co-host, and today we continue with our series with the Saskatchewan Ombudsman, Kevin Fenwick, to talk about the duties of various ombudsmen around the world. And in the second half of the show, we'll focus on the inclusion of the role of the ombudsman in school curriculums in the province. Welcome, Kevin.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mona. Jim. Good to see you again.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming back, and welcome to our listeners. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question that some people might not have ever thought of. Is fairness the same as equality?
Good question. And my suggestion would be that it's not.
Okay.
Although it's a thought that when most people first address, I think they would often say, yes, fair means equal. And I think it is fair to say that fair does mean equal most of the time in most circumstances. But there's a saying, and I'm not sure I'll get it quite right, but it goes something like this, that the greatest inequality is treating unequal people the same in unequal situations. And so the situation often arises where you have rules and regulations and procedures that are set down, assuming that everyone is treated the same, assuming that everyone has similar circumstances, but too strict an application of those rules means that there's an unfairness that results. So my short answer to your question is fairness means equitable, but fairness doesn't necessarily mean equal.
Okay. I hear a key word in there for me is circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of example could you give us where there might be someone thinking they're treating someone fairly, because the concept of treating everyone with equality is always, you know, so we would hope, you know, topmost in our minds, but due to circumstances, it doesn't turn out to be fair for everybody.
Well, let me give you an example that actually came into our office a couple of years ago when the Ministry of Social Services brought in a new policy that said that everyone who's receiving social assistance benefits should have a bank account so that the ministry could deposit their assistance benefits by direct deposit. And that's a good policy. I think there's lots of good reasons for it. And for people who are receiving benefits, it's quicker and it's cleaner. And the ministry saves some money so that they don't have to publish the checks. And it means that people who are receiving benefits are interacting with the banking system. And they're not a couple of times a month walking out of the corner grocery store with, you know, cash falling out of their pockets kind of thing. So it's a good idea. And when that policy was introduced, it was thought to be fair, that it would apply equally to everyone across the province.
And people would get their money sooner as well.
And people would get their money sooner. And so lots of good reasons for it. The problem was is that after the new policy came in for direct deposit, we had about 10 or 12 complaints come into our office within the first week.
Wow.
Because we have some northern communities that don't have a financial institution. So we had people in some northern communities who were being told that they were going to be cut off assistance because the policy says you have to have a bank account, and they didn't have a bank account. So everyone was being treated equally, but the rule that was designed for the average person didn't work well for people in special circumstances, such as a northern community that didn't have a bank.
Areas.
Exactly.
Right.
So we were able to talk to the Ministry of Social Services about that, and to the ministry's credit, they fixed the problem very quickly and made some exceptions for people for whom it was not practical to use a direct deposit method. But that's a good example, I think, of equal not necessarily being fair.
Okay, thanks. And I'm wondering about different countries, you know, that we can look at it from a global perspective, that in different countries, in different provinces, in different countries, just like here, that there might be different roles that the ombudsman might play. And we have, I have some information here. This is a nice little report. And it says, what in the world does an ombudsman do? And like last week you talked a little, or last time you were here 2 weeks ago, you talked a little bit about the first ombudsman and coming from Sweden, right? We've got stories here from Botswana, from Australia, from Moscow, Malta. There's all kinds of stories. There's about 10 different stories in here from the United Kingdom. And they are so varied. It's incredible, the stories and some of the things that the ombudsman in different countries would deal with. I like this one. This is particularly interesting for Jim and I, who spent time last summer at the G20 in the protest march against human rights violations that happened in Russia. The human rights ombudsman called for an inquiry into a savage and inappropriate crackdown on a group of protesters. Would you care to comment on that?
That's a good example of the different kinds of ombudsman work around the world. And if I can just take a minute to talk generally before I talk about that specific case. 2 years ago, in 2009, we celebrated the 200th anniversary of what is usually recognized as the establishment of the first ombudsman in the Western world. It was in 1809 in Sweden that the office of the ombudsman was first enshrined in their constitution. So 200 years ago, we celebrated that, and I was very fortunate to be able to have a lot of interaction a couple of years ago with ombudsmen from around the world as a result of those celebrations. And what became apparent to me is just how different the kinds of work is around the world that ombudsmen do. And I think of it, Mona and Jim, as if it's four different levels. It's like climbing a set of stairs. And at the first step, at the most basic level, the job of the ombudsman in some countries is to protect basic human rights. And some ombudsmen spend a lot of their time in some countries, especially countries where there is not a strong democratic tradition, ensuring that the rights of the citizens simply to be not beaten up in the streets by police officers or government officials is the basic level of protection to which they're entitled. So that's sort of basic human rights one. The second step, and this is a little bit closer to the Moscow example, the second step is in many countries, ombudsmen concentrate a lot of their time on making sure that people's basic democratic rights are protected, that there are free and fair elections, that there's the right to participate in demonstrations, for example, as was the case in Moscow. That's certainly the case with some of my colleagues and counterparts in South America. A lot of what they do is making sure that people have the right to participate in the democratic process free from coercion and inappropriate use of force. And so that's what was happening in Moscow, is that although the laws provided for freedom of assembly and freedom of speech, having it on paper and really allowing it in practice aren't necessarily the same thing. And so the ombudsman for Russia took a look at that situation and made some very harsh comments about the way that those protesters were treated. It was intended to be a regularly scheduled peaceful demonstrations. If I recall the facts correctly, it was on the 31st of every month, if the month had 31 days. So whatever that works out to, seven times a year, they were going to have a peaceful demonstration. But the government didn't like the fact that there was these protests, and so they had police that were acting brutally, was the word that you used, and mm-hmm. that was what was reported by the
savage
ombudsman.
Savage and inappropriate.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the ombudsman took a look at that, and the ombudsman made recommendations to the government on how to improve that situation. So that's sort of the second level. Just before I move on, if I can talk about the other two steps on the ladder, if you will. The third level, which is what most of us do in Canada as ombudsmen, is make sure that the government treats people fairly. So we're fairly comfortable in this country and very fortunate that our basic human rights are usually protected. We usually have the right to vote in a free and fair election. But what we're not always sure of is that government will treat people equitably, that the rules are applied fairly. So that's what we do here. And then the fourth level that is developing in the ombudsman world now is one step up higher, I think, That's about best practices. It's about an ombudsman going in and saying to government, you maybe haven't done anything wrong here, but you could have done better. So that's the more recent and newer developing level of ombudsman work.
Okay. Let's look at another case here. In Australia, a 17-year-old could not get an emergency place to live. Oh, this is very interesting because he wasn't 18 yet, and I would gather the age of majority is 18 years old in Australia. And this is where the ombudsman stepped in. And it's interesting that a 17-year-old would know enough to go to an ombudsman in Australia. So it sounds like maybe that they're well-known.
Well, actually, we'll talk in the second half of the program sure. about some of the schoolwork, but actually yeah. Australia does a very good job of educating their young people about what the role of the ombudsman is, and they have some wonderful commercials, actually, that they run on television about involving students in a playground and talking about what's fair and what's not, and they make the linkage to the ombudsman.
Okay.
So maybe that's why this particular 17-year-old was aware of the role of the ombudsman.
Right.
But yes, you're describing a situation that happened in New South Wales, where they have a very active ombudsman office. New South Wales is one of the states in Australia, and this was an individual who didn't quite fit the rules, mm-hmm. because the rules would say that if you are 18 years of age or more and you need an emergency place to live, that will be provided to you. This individual was only 17, but for all intents and purposes was away from home, out in the workforce, like an adult would be. And so the ombudsman in that case made recommendations to make sure that 17-year-olds who were really acting more like what we would expect from 18-year-olds and older, that is adults, should be treated like adults and should be entitled to the same services as any other adult would be.
Okay. The one thing that I'm looking at in this particular case also is, would that housing, the place of housing, have been a government-run organization?
In all likelihood, it would have been. Ombudsman work, for the kind of ombudsman that I am, at least, ombudsman work is about government agencies.
Right.
Yes. And so in Saskatchewan, for example, where we have housing authorities all right. across the province, I have the ability as ombudsman and my staff have the ability to go in and look at situations for agencies where their boards of directors are appointed by the government, and housing authorities in Saskatchewan have their boards appointed by the government. So the same situation could arise here, and in fact, every year we do receive some complaints about housing authorities, and we do review those situations.
Okay. There's one from the UK about an 18-year-old woman with diabetes who died, and her family believed she had not been given proper medical care. And they went to their ombudsman. And I think that probably happens here as well, that there are times when people call your office complaining about the healthcare system.
Certainly. And as a matter of fact, that's an area of growth for our office. We have just recently, as a matter of fact, expanded our level of expertise in the health field in Saskatchewan. The ombudsman in Saskatchewan has always had jurisdiction over and responsibility for the health field ever since the office was established in Saskatchewan in 1973. There's been a lot of attention paid over the last few years, however, to the health field and the need for ombudsman services in the health field. So the current government in the last election campaign actually promised the creation, they called it, of a health ombudsman office. Now what's happened is our office this past year was provided with some additional money to hire additional staff mm-hmm. to help us specifically in the health field. So we received last year about 141 complaints into our office about matters that involved the Ministry of Health, the various regional health authorities, and the Cancer Agency. And so we do a lot of work in that field. What we don't do is we don't review clinical decisions of doctors and nurses and others in the field. It's not my job to go in and say whether this person needs the surgery
right.
or doesn't need the
right.
surgery. But what we do is we look at the processes that are in place to make sure that the processes are fair. So, for example, we would look at how the Cancer Agency manages its waiting list for treatment services. We would look at how a health region decides on the placement for senior citizens in their special care homes. And our job is to make sure that the processes that they have are open and transparent and fair.
Okay. And then that would lead me to maybe best practices where you would possibly be making suggestions for better practices in the future.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. That's precisely what our goal is. We talk in our office about raising the bar.
Right.
It's no longer enough in our mind for government to just deliver the basic minimal level of fairness. Mm-hmm. We think that there should be best practices in place. Mm-hmm. We think that government should be as fair as possible. And so we raise the bar now, and we'll make recommendations even where government agencies didn't do something wrong, mm-hmm. but could have done something better.
Okay, and here's a very interesting one from Islamabad, Pakistan. Electricity in a government power pole killed two water buffaloes, but the government would not pay the farmer, so the farmer went to the ombudsman for help. I'm trying to translate that into a Saskatchewan picture here, and I don't know how I would do that, but you can go ahead and comment
on
it.
I can honestly say we've never had a complaint about a water buffalo that's been killed by a power line in Saskatchewan. But we actually have a case that's a little bit different than that, that's more typical for Saskatchewan, and that is an individual who had their brand new truck and brand new stock trailer damaged when a power line fell down across a highway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that is a direct example, because in some countries, the water buffalo might be your prime implement of agriculture.
Absolutely.
In Saskatchewan, it might be your farm truck. And what happened in that case is that there was a power line that came down across a road, probably due to a lightning strike, although one was never able to determine exactly what happened. And the power line actually got wrapped up around this vehicle and the trailer that followed it and did some considerable damage. Insurance covered most of the damage, but the individual didn't think it was fair that he should have to pay a fairly significant deductible for something that clearly wasn't his fault. Sask Power has a policy that says we are not going to be responsible for damage that occurs for things beyond our control, such as lightning.
And that's what they kind of tried to claim here in Pakistan. It wasn't under their control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is actually another good example of equal not necessarily being fair and equitable.
Okay.
Because we think Sask Power's general rule makes sense. If a power line is struck by lightning out in a rural area somewhere,
right.
and it falls down and it causes damage, then that wasn't Sask Power's fault. But we also felt that this was a special situation. This was a major highway in Saskatchewan. So we felt in these circumstances that you or I or anyone else, including the individual involved in this case, should be able to drive down the highway feeling safe from getting tangled up in a downed power line. So we thought the special circumstances in this case meant that it was fair that Sask Power should pay for this particular individual's deductible for the damage to their vehicle. And Power agreed, and they did that.
Okay. And that's basically the same thing that happened in Pakistan, isn't it?
Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. The ombudsman decided there was an electric current in the pole because of a problem with the structure. And they were told to pay the man for the loss of his two buffaloes.
Mm-hmm.
So he won his case. How much time do we have, Jim, before the break?
Oh, lots of time. We've got about 8 minutes.
Oh, great. Okay, so we can talk about a few more. Let's go back to Malta. This is about Christmas. Very interesting cases here. A musical society entered a Christmas light competition and won third place. They complained to the ombudsman that the government committee in charge of the contest didn't run it fairly or even follow its own rules. And there's a couple of things in here where it says the group that won third place believe that their efforts deserved a higher award, and they believe they were victims of discrimination, and that was one of the major reasons they took it to the ombudsman. And they claimed that the contest was not judged openly and fairly. And then there's another one in here that you can talk about. And basically, this is, I don't know if you've ever run into anything close to this at your office here.
I can't actually think of an example very close to this that we've had in our office, but it still does demonstrate a couple of principles. And one is that if an agency is going to have a process, and it doesn't matter if you're awarding a prize for Christmas decorations or if you're awarding a significant government contract for road building work or health delivery services or whatever it is, you need to have a process that people can understand. You need to have a process that is fair, that doesn't arbitrarily or unduly favor one particular individual or class of individuals. And once you have that process in place, you should follow that process. And so the problem here was is that when the ombudsman looked at this situation, what he found was that the rules weren't very clear, that they were very, very confusing, and that itself meant that there was an unfairness created. But even though there were some rules in place, poor as they were, the agency didn't really follow the rules anyway. And so that resulted in an unfairness. Now, just before everybody starts to call our office saying they don't like the decision that was made at the local agricultural fair for who had the biggest cabbage, we normally don't look at these kinds of issues because they're not normally run by government agencies.
Right, that's the difference.
The one in Malta must have been a government agency.
Run by a government agency, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and a member of the committee and of the Council for Culture and the Arts, so that would have been a government organization, I would imagine, was also a member of the Musical Society that won the contest for the last 3 years. So you can see where there might have been a little bit of concern about that.
A little
that.
Bit of bias. Actually, yeah. We did have one situation, as I think of it, that was not too different from this, and it involved the awarding of a certain kind of medical contracts by one of the health regions, and there were a couple of agencies that did not get contracts and thought they should have, and they complained to us. And so what we did is we looked at the selection process that the health region was using to award these contracts, and what we found was is that they had a questionnaire that had about, if I recall correctly, 16 or so questions on it. And we had some concerns about the questionnaire because for about 14 out of the 16 questions, every profession or every business that was in this particular medical field answered exactly the same way. And so that meant that the contracts were going to be awarded based on the answers to the only two questions where their answers were different. And when we looked at those two questions, we found that they were extremely ambiguous, and that people were answering them very, very differently. Mm-hmm. So what we did in that case was, very much the same as in Malta, we looked at the situation and we made some best practices, recommendations to that health region for how they should do their survey next time. We didn't cancel the contracts that they had awarded, just like in Malta. They didn't cancel the prize to the third place winner. But what we did say is that when you next award these contracts, when the term is up, you need to make sure that the rules that you have are better and fairer and clearer,
right,
and
more concise.
More concise, exactly.
Right.
And they agreed, and they've done that.
Well, that's great. I'd like to get back a little bit to the concept of fairness that you've talked about. There's a few areas that you cover when you're talking about fairness, and that is unreasonableness, whether something is contrary to law, whether something appears to be unjust, oppressive, improperly discriminatory, or based on a mistake of law or fact, or just basically wrong. There's a lot here to consider when you're talking about fairness. And one of the things that came to mind when I was reading this over was something being unjust. And I'll read this. A decision or action of government would be unjust if it is inappropriately punitive or has consequences beyond what is appropriate to the circumstances. This, I would say, might apply to your example of the mail and having to have a bank account when you don't even have a bank close to where you live, and then you would be cut off of assistance, right? So if it was arbitrary or it imposes inordinate and unnecessary obligations, one of the things that I've run into in my career in the past is certain government organizations requiring their clients to meet certain standards, or their whole lives are changed forever and continually piling on new standards, more and more and more, and sort of holding them almost hostage to, you have to do this, otherwise you won't get what you want from us. And I find that that is not uncommon, and people tend to end up losing hope about ever getting what they need. I don't know if you've had a lot of complaints in that way or not. And, you know, there's a few government services that I'm thinking about in that area.
Yeah, I think government is getting better on those, but there are lots of situations where that certainly could be a problem. And I mean, I'll give a fairly simple example that doesn't exist as far as I know, but could. If If you, for example, were to lose your driver's license for the rest of your life the first right. time you got a speeding ticket,
right.
most people would say that is unjust and unfair. So those are the kinds of right. things that are looked at under the unjustness and unfairness.
Okay.
It's interesting that in all of those things that you were just reading, those are the words that are used in the Ombudsman and Children's Advocates Act. That's the law that gives right. my office its authority. The word fairness actually doesn't appear anywhere in that act.
Okay.
But fairness is the word that I think most people would use to sort of roll all of those other things
right.
into one.
And we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break.
Okay, and before I do that, I'm just going to congratulate the winners of the CJTR Look and Listen Lottery. They are grand prize winner William Holshot of Regina, second prize winner Bruce Lorimer of Regina, and third prize winner Ken Christoffel. So congratulations to those folks, and thank you to everyone who bought tickets and helped make CJTR's first ever lottery a terrific success. And that was Susie Vinnick from a CD entitled Happy Here. Mona and I were lucky enough to hear her perform at Roman and Brenda Tachek's place, a home concert, which was...
That.
Yeah, pardon me?
I remember now.
Oh, I'm going to turn your mic on there. I
oh,
remember
am
that.
I back?
You're back now.
Okay, I remember that. It was great.
Yeah, it was. She's a great, great performer.
Yeah.
And then I found out a friend of mine up in Saskatoon gave her first bass lesson.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So. You're pretty excited about that.
Still excited.
So we're back with Kevin Fenwick from the Office of the Ombudsman Saskatchewan. And we covered some global issues and the Ombudsman offices in different countries and some really interesting cases. If you missed that, you can catch it on our podcast. And Jim will let you know how to do that later. Now I want to talk with Kevin about this program they have for schools. What grades do you start at?
Well, in as soon as possible. Right now, the materials that we have for the schools are designed for two particular classes, and that's grade 10 social studies and the grade 12 law class.
Okay.
Law 30, it's called. It's not just for grade 12 students, although that's mostly that are in it. We're hoping that our materials could be used by teachers in other levels and other classes as well. We're considering whether to develop a specific package for the middle years, and we've even been asked to think about a package for teachers to be used in the early years, although it probably wouldn't be about ombudsman per se, but would be more just about fairness.
Okay.
And this came about, Mona, for a couple of reasons, one of which is we did a bit of a survey in our office about, 5 years ago now, and we were curious about just how aware the people of Saskatchewan were about the Office of the Ombudsman. And some of the information we got back was encouraging, and that was that it was around 60% or a bit more of the people that were surveyed said they'd heard of the Ombudsman. The discouraging part was that it was a much, much smaller percentage who had an accurate idea about what the Ombudsman was all about. Lots of people had heard the term, but there used to be a program on CBC television a few years ago called The Ombudsman, and there was a fellow by the name of Robert Cooper who used to do these investigations of big companies and government agencies, etc. And I think there are still some people who think that my job is to sneak into an office with a hidden camera in my briefcase, and that's not the way we
actually
work.
Actually, I had a job similar to that at one time.
What we found was is that a lot of people didn't know correctly about what the Ombudsman was. The other thing the survey told us was that the younger the person was, the less likely it was that they would have heard about the Ombudsman and know about the Ombudsman. So we made it a priority of our office to do what we could to equip young people with knowledge so that they could use the Office of the Ombudsman as a basic tool in a democratic country. And that's really what it's about. Ombudsman work is about making sure that people are treated fairly. And that's about the democratic process. It's about people being engaged with their government. It's one of the reasons that when we talk about ombudsman work, we talk about the processes that governments use. Processes that governments use should be open and transparent and inclusive. There's a really neat thing that's happened in our sister province to the east, in Manitoba, where of course their provincial symbol is the bison.
Right.
They have developed a package for the schools that they call, I think it's called Running with the Herd. And it's about the idea that students should engage in the democratic process and talks about how the ombudsman is part of that democratic process. So we've used some of those concepts and developed our own materials, and we have a very good section on our website for students and teachers so that students can access the information on their own, or teachers can take that information and incorporate it into their classes, and especially for social studies and for that Law 30 class.
Right. I also noticed that they can use it in their history classes too.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. It makes all kinds
of
sense.
This is really fascinating. The teacher's material there's a lot of questions. They can present the cases, for instance, even some of those global cases that we talked about, and then ask the students to think about, critically analyze, what were the problems here, what were the processes. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
There's actually 8 classes that are listed there where we have worked with people from the Ministry of Education who've looked at our materials, and they have said your materials are directly relevant to these 8 classes that are in the high school curriculum.
Yeah.
We've tried to make it so that a teacher can go to our website, pick up those materials, and walk into class and say, here's the ready-made kit, if you like. And it includes exercises, and it includes study sessions, and it includes written materials and examples as well. So if there's any teachers out there listening over the noon hour today, we would encourage you to look at that teachers and students section on our website, and by all means, make use of what's there.
Right. And I noticed that each different avenue of working here has teacher's notes.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher has something readily available to teach the program about investigation. Let's see. There's a suggested classroom activities, how to coach when you're teaching, how to coach them to answer the questions, I guess. What else have we got here? There's all kinds of teacher's notes. It's really good. I think this is great.
We've tried some additional things to raise the levels of awareness as well. We have on one occasion at least, we've done a general mailing to the schools in the province.
Mm-hmm.
We've made lots of presentations in a number of schools across the province. We will make ourselves available to come in and talk to students if a teacher calls and would like a guest speaker to come in and talk. A couple of years ago, in conjunction with the 200th anniversary that I talked about, we ran an essay contest for high school students from across Saskatchewan to take part in an essay that would be about ombudsman and ombudsman work. And a young high school student from Maple Creek won the award. As a matter of fact, the teacher in that school had every student in the high school, it was a small school, had every student in the high school write an essay, and then the winner was selected and submitted to our office, and that's the person that won for the province.
Wow. Is there like a PowerPoint? I noticed that there's on the front here on the teacher's notes about slides, explains what an ombudsman is, how they got started.
Yes.
So this is something that they can use a PowerPoint.
Absolutely. They can download all of that off our website. Yeah. And there's certainly, of course, no cost
right
to
on
that.
The website.
So, yeah, I'm not actually sure if the PowerPoint slides are or not, but certainly
but
we can make
ask,
them available if
yeah,
they contact us.
Contact your office, absolutely.
I noticed the PowerPoint loaded on a thumb drive.
Yes.
Yes, because we got a teacher package. And you mentioned that you were at a student conference last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming up in Kindersley, a student leadership conference.
Last year was in Meadow Lake. This year's is in Kindersley. It happens in September in every year. It's a student leadership conference that involves 700 to 800 students from across the province. It is a major undertaking where students are brought together over the course of about 2.5 days, I think it is, and they do a number of things in terms of self-development and developing leadership skills over a wide range of topics. And for some of that time, there are a number of concurrent sessions that they go on, that go on, and students can select which session that they go to. And so we have gone up and done a couple of sessions with them on the role of the ombudsman and the history of the ombudsman mm-hmm. and how it fits in with student democracy. And we're doing the same thing again this year. What we try and do is we try to do a very interactive section. So that we will have the students imagine that they are in a village, and then they're in a city, and then they're in a province, and we'll divide the students up, and we'll give them a fairly general but a real-life problem to solve, mm-hmm. where just like decisions that governments face every day, there's only so much money available, and every community wants a new hospital and a new road and a new school, and somehow, just as governments do, they have to figure out who gets what. And I want to say that I was so impressed last year with the group in Meadow Lake, because we divided them up into groups and we gave them these options, and maybe I was a bit too cynical, but I sort of expected that some of the groups would come out and say, our group wants the new school and the new hospital and the new road. And, you know, there wasn't one single group that do that. They were all finding creative ways to share and ways that they thought that, for example, one group I remember said, well, if we had the money to build the new road, that would give us better access to the hospital and the school in the next community. So it was very encouraging to see these high school students thinking very much as politicians have to think about how we make the best use of our resources and share them.
Right. So we're looking at our future politicians, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Something I noticed in your package is a sheet that says solving problems on your own. And I really like this. And you have made suggestions here to anyone who may have a problem that there might be a way to solve it on your own, rather than have your own processes and learn about a process to do that, rather than calling the office. So you want to talk about that. There's some great suggestions
Well,
here.
That's consistent with the work that we do in our office. One of the most interesting things about the work we do, and maybe one of the most ironic things, is that almost everyone who comes to our office with a complaint has an ongoing relationship with the same agency that they're complaining about. So they might be a social assistance recipient, they might be a workers' comp beneficiary, they might be an inmate in a correctional center, they might be an SGI customer, they might be a farmer who has a contract with Saskatchewan Crop Insurance Corporation. Whatever it is, most people who come to us have a problem right now with the agency, but once that problem gets solved, they are going to continue to have some kind of a working relationship with that agency. So one way for us to approach things would be to become their champion and their advocate and simply go in and solve the problem for them. And we could do that, but if we do that, then that means the next time they have a problem, they're coming back to us again to solve it for them. What we would like to do is to work with them to solve the problem with the government agency and work with the government agency to solve the problem with the citizen and hopefully leave both of them with a better problem-solving process so that next time an issue arises, they can work together to solve it on their own. You know, it's our variation of the old give a man a fish and you feed him for a day and teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so we try very hard to do that. It takes a bit more time for us to do things that way. It means that our files are more complicated and our people have to work harder. But in the long run, we think that that pays dividends.
Absolutely. We get more responsible citizens who have good problem-solving skills.
Absolutely.
And they can advocate for themselves so much easier. And I'm just going to go over these suggestions because this is something that I do every day in the work that I do as well. And that is help people to understand that you need to be prepared and you know what kind of questions you're going to ask. I mean, there's nothing like picking up the phone because you're very, very angry, right? And you want to complain about something to somebody on the other end and you're so angry that you don't even know what questions to ask, or you're very confused about what's happening, so you don't know what questions to ask. Make sure they're relevant questions. Be prepared. Keep records, right, of dates, titles, names, decisions, actions, and it's okay to ask somebody for their name if you feel like you're not being treated very well. I say it's also okay to ask somebody who their supervisor is or if they could speak to a supervisor if you don't feel that you're getting anywhere. Be pleasant because the person on the other end of the phone has a job to do and they're trying their best that day. Maybe it's not the best day they're having, but it's always important to be pleasant, right? Keeping records, asking questions, that's important. How do we know what kind of questions to ask?
Well, we often talk about the difference between open questions and closed questions, and
right.
And usually it's better to ask questions that are seeking information. So if you're in a disagreement with someone, then the questions you want to ask are things like, can you tell me what it is about that that's important for you? Can you tell me how that particular policy applies to me?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to me why you feel that way? Or can you help me understand why you don't think the policy applies to me? Those are better questions than something that says, don't you think that this is just a silly rule?
Right.
So the broader questions are better questions.
Right. And once again, talking to the right people is so important.
For sure. And you make a good point. I don't think there is anything wrong with asking for someone's name and asking for someone's supervisor. It's not usually helpful if you do that in a threatening
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Exactly.
But if you approach it from the perspective that, you know, Mona, you and I don't seem to be able to agree here. I'd like to talk to somebody else who might be able to, mm-hmm. to exercise some discretion if this policy doesn't apply to me and I don't think it should.
Right.
And that's fair game.
Right, absolutely. One of the points you make is keep asking questions until you understand what happened and why. I think sometimes mm-hmm. people tend to give up a bit too easily.
Sure.
When they don't understand the process, when they don't understand what they're being told. And do you get phone calls where people have said, I've tried to deal with them, but we're not meeting here at all?
Had one of those 2 days ago, actually,
okay.
where I had someone who called me and they had a problem with SGI.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that they should have insurance coverage for the loss of use of their vehicle. And they explained to me that their particular insurance policy that they had with SGI, they had a package policy that didn't cover loss of use of the vehicle. And yet this person was complaining that they should be covering the cost that it took for us to drive to the other community where the broken down car was and pick it up. And so I listened for a while and I asked some questions and then I explained that I didn't agree or disagree with SGI, mm-hmm. but let me try and interpret for you why SGI feels the way that they do. And the basic part of the question was, your insurance doesn't cover you for the replacement of your vehicle while it's being repaired. At the end of the day, the person said to me, I don't necessarily agree with what they did. I still think that I'm the victim here because it wasn't my fault the accident happened, so somebody should pay for it. but thank you for explaining to me why it's not SGI that should be responsible for paying for it. It should be the person who hit my car not SGI. And so what they said was, I didn't get a good enough explanation before. Now, maybe the person from SGI didn't do a good enough job of explaining, mm-hmm. or maybe this person didn't ask the right questions or didn't ask enough questions.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a difference between asking the questions until you get the answer you want,
right,
or asking the question until you get an explanation that you understand.
That you can understand, mm-hmm. yeah, and be able to accept that whether or not you like it or not, because sometimes that's all you're going to get.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the last one here. It's about picking worthwhile fights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I learned that a few years ago. Someone taught me, said to me, Mona, you got to learn how to pick your battles, because I'm always battling, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of us need to be selective, and some people are open to fighting over everything, and then there's some people who just will give up at the drop of a hat when they really don't have to. So I think, so I'm sure you hear from both of them, but maybe more from those who are willing to fight over anything.
Sure. Sometimes we wish that that more people would come to us with issues that that they should be arguing about. They should be, we try not to use the word fighting about, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah,
sometimes we wish more people would come forward. We also know that that for every person who does come to us with a complaint, there are probably dozens out there who are facing the same issue,
right,
who don't bring it forward because they either don't know about us, mm-hmm. or aren't comfortable raising the issue. And that
right.
can be a cultural thing. It can be based on your own personal life experiences.
Yeah.
Which is why we always try in our office to get beneath the presenting problem that comes to us.
Right.
We try to dig a little deeper, because there's a pretty good chance that if you were to bring an issue to us, if we dig a little deeper and we find out what the underlying issues are, there are probably a lot more people out there who are facing the same questions that you are. So a lot of the recommendations that we make and a lot of the changes that we're involved in for government might be for one particular individual, but the impact might be much, much broader than that. Let me give you a quick example. We had a young couple come to us a little while ago who were Saskatchewan residents, and they were attending university outside of the country. They thought that when they were back home in Saskatchewan during the summer months when they weren't attending school, that they should have coverage in Saskatchewan for medical benefits. Saskatchewan Health agreed that they should have a Saskatchewan health card, but the rules were that you're not covered if you're not ordinarily resident in Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. was the words. So these two people had been told that they weren't covered because they lived 9 months of the year outside the country.
Okay.
We thought that was unfair,
mm-hmm.
and we made a recommendation to the government. Actually, we started to do a review, and we talked to the government about it, and before we even had to make a formal recommendation, the Ministry of Health looked at that and said, you know what, you're right. These are Saskatchewan people who are temporarily absent for a specific reason to go to school, and so we're going to change that policy. So the young couple who came to us received benefits. And Sask Health told us that there were about 2,800 people in a similar situation that they were aware of, and so that one complaint led to a better level of government service for about 2,800 people.
Which means that keeping track of complaints is extremely important.
Mm, sure.
Right. Very important. How much time we got left?
About 7.5 minutes.
7.5 minutes. Okay. Is there anything that you wanted to cover?
How about 6.5 minutes?
Okay.
I'm not good at math here. I'm looking at a clock. I'm counting down. And
well, I think...
Let's call it 6.5.
Okay. if we want to go back to the schools, actually, and
sure.
what you're doing in the schools, something like this is, I think, invaluable to helping young people learn how to problem solve, learn how to pay attention to detail. One of the things on this sheet that says solving problems on your own is talking about paying attention to details, reading everything. And I think, you know, teaching young people that if you don't understand what you're reading, ask, try and get some help to understand what it means. It talks a little bit about appeals, and I know that appeals are very common when someone is trying to get some help for something and they've been denied a service of some sort, denied an appeal, and they may get a letter And then later on, find out, you know, someone says, well, we sent you a letter saying, you know, your appeal has been denied. And they didn't even open the letter. Or they opened the letter and they couldn't understand what it meant. And as you mentioned earlier, that could be for many reasons why they couldn't understand what it meant.
Absolutely. It's, again, the ombudsman is part of a democratic process. And sometimes I joke that our ultimate goal should be to make ourselves redundant. If I could figure out a way to do my job perfectly so that everyone understood what their rights were and government was delivering every service in the fairest way possible, and we could teach everyone on the government side and the citizen side on how to problem solve on their own, there'd be no need for the ombudsman. So our ultimate goal should be to try and get all of those services delivered in a perfect way so nobody comes to the ombudsman with a complaint. Well, I have about 3.5 years left in my second term, and I'm guessing there's enough work to keep us busy at least that long.
Yeah.
But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to leave government and citizens with those better problem-solving processes so that they can engage with each other. Because we need to remember, government
right.
agencies are us.
Right.
As citizens, we're the ones that vote the government in that creates those agencies. And so those members of Legislative Assembly are representatives of you and I and everyone else. They're doing what we can't do as individuals, and so we ask them to do it for us collectively. But they're us. That's who they're representing.
Well, yeah, that's just it. They get out of bed and they go to work the same as we do every day.
So it shouldn't be us against the government. It should be us with our government.
And vice versa.
Precisely. So that's why we're trying to encourage people to learn how to do that kind of problem solving. And the sooner we can start, the better. There's wonderful work going on in the schools with programs like Playground Peacemakers and those types of things that are teaching basic problem solving skills at the elementary school level. We think we have a role to play in that so that people are engaging with their government agencies, and that might be the student representative council, it might be your town council, it might be your home and school association, it might be the Regina Minor Baseball Association. Those are all governing institutions, and so we want people to be able to be included in those, engage with them, and problem solve when problems arise.
Your ombudsman curriculum tie-ins to the school programs and curriculum they're not mandatory. They haven't been made mandatory.
No, they're not.
For any teacher who would like to access them, are they?
Right. My understanding of the curriculum now, and it's been a long time since I was in high school, but my understanding is that teachers have a considerable degree of flexibility to pick and choose from a number of different approved programs.
Right.
Ours is one of those approved programs, so that they can pick and choose and use it as they see fit.
Right. And some of these classes look great. Political decision making from the role of government in modern democratic societies. Another one is human rights from democratic moral vision. Interesting about, democracy and morality are included in the same title. Governance from welfare. Know that the welfare of those who do not have power is dependent upon the political, legal, and judicial systems which limit and hold accountable those who have power. This is kind of what it's about, is accountability, I think, on both sides.
Yeah, and you're reading from some of the lists of the curricula
right.
that's available in high schools now.
The social studies curriculum.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To me, that sounds like things I would have expected years ago at the university level,
and
we're now teaching it in the high
schools.
I'm
amazed at what they're doing in high school.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazed.
Yeah.
We have 2 minutes left. Before we leave, there's announcements I want to make. For those of you who were listening last week, you know that we had the Committee for Future Generations on the show to talk about the issues of nuclear waste management. And the organization that has been created very recently of a number of communities from the northern Saskatchewan who have come together with some organizations like Clean Green Saskatchewan and a few others in the province to basically fight for their rights to have the Universal Declaration, not the Universal, the United Nations Declaration on the rights of Indigenous people recognized and implemented when it comes to, what's the term I'm looking for, Jim? We got 1 minute left. The right to consult. That's
yes.
it. It's,
yes.
They're having a lot of problems with this. And anyway, the community is not the right word. And I guess they had announced that it was a Community for Future Generations. If you want to get in touch with them, go to the Committee for Future Generations. Missions, and you can get in touch with that group. Find it on Facebook, find it on the internet. And we're going to say goodbye to Kevin. Thank you for coming. It's been wonderful having you.
Thanks very much for having me here and for making me feel is such a part of a comfortable conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. We'll have you back again sometime.
Sounds great.
Take care and bye, everybody.
Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."